Good afternoon, my grizzly gothropologist. Today is October 29th of 2015, and I'm Bertel Mabarak. This is Gothropology, an anthropology and psychology-centric show with a goth twist. If you've been waiting for a guide to come and take you by the hand, here I am. That tune was Screamin' Runaway by the Gothic Archies, as always, and today I have three guests, David, Jasmine, and Kitty. The first of two, oh goodness, I wrote this actually in a particular order. Jasmine and Kitty perform as marionettes under the puppet master in The Grace of Bondage. I was sort of basing this a little bit off of you guys' Facebook description. And there were some other things, really, that originally when we had talked about, or you guys had brought up wanting to be on the show, there were some other things that we were going to talk about as well, which I will introduce in due time. But in any case, when I usually have guests on, I'll have Googled their background before so I can introduce them accordingly. But if you guys would like to introduce yourselves, I would be delighted.
Hi, my name's David. I'm actually Sin 7 and the Puppet Master. I created the show and, yeah.
Okie doke.
I'm Kitty. I'm a makeup artist and a musician. The whole dancing thing is new to me, so I'm a puppet.
Very fair. And Jasmine.
I'm Jasmine. I'm a contortionist and I do makeup. I perform as a puppet in The Grace of Bondage.
Fantastic. So, I guess a good starter question is, what incepted The Grace of Bondage and, like, the founding idea that you had, and if you wanted to go into what your original performances were like and what?
Sure. Okay, so what originally started The Grace of Bondage was I was hanging out with some friends who are also part of what is known the LA Fetish Film Festival, and they were looking for another act for their show. I've been walking on stilts professionally for the better part of my life, and we had sat down and talked about it, and I had some other friends who are well-known performers who were like, well, could you come up with something new, something fresh, something that you don't really see anywhere else? And I thought to myself, well, all right. So I got a hold of some stilts and put together this concept of a puppeteer and a marionette, and it started with me and a girl. I don't even remember her name, which sounds terrible, I know. She was actually loaned to me from the Grace of, or not, I'm sorry, from the LA Fetish Film Festival staff. She was actually originally one of their nylon girls. But, so I ended up taking her on for the first show, and we kind of winged it. It was fun, a lot of improv, sadly. We worked out some choreography. She didn't really show up for things, just kind of flaky, which is why I didn't continue forward with her.
Mm-hmm.
The first show went off really well. We ended up finding out that we were the ones they actually wanted us to come out and do an encore, and long story short, we ended up moving on to the next year. By the next year, I had really kind of decided that I wanted to take this somewhere else, because originally it was just a concept for a one show gig. But when I saw the amount of attention that came from it, and I saw the potential of, like, limitless expression, I decided to move forward with that. That being said, I got a hold of my friend Jules, Lady Jules, who is also one of our main marionettes as well. And we started doing choreography and stuff like that for another show. By the next year, The Grace of Bondage, we had actually sat down and worked out an entire, like, performance thing that was actually well put together. We performed it. It's actually on our page. And we got awed and oohed and asked to continue to come back and do it. So from that point, I started to move forward. And I asked myself, well, what could I do more with everything? And, I mean, it was just me and one marionette. But by the time I was done, I realized that I wanted to create something with ambiance. I wanted to create something that people could see that was visually interpretive, not something that was like everybody's like, you know, okay, that's cool, whatever. But the whole interpretive dance thing was always kind of an interesting thing to me.
Okay, so and you mentioned how people originally reacted even when you just started to do it. What kind of effect, ideally, would you want your performance to have on people?
Actually, I can sum that up. We did a performance not too long ago, and after the performance was over with, we had gone to a local dungeon club thingy. It's pretty exclusive, called the Lair de Sod. Mm-hmm. And we'd gone there with a bunch of people from the actual event who'd seen the event. And I had a few people sit me down and talk to me about the event. And they were like, I couldn't tell what was going on there. But it made me sad. It made me happy. They were scared. They were excited. They felt terrible for some of the puppets. But then they were really interested in what the story was going, how the story was going. And all that came from interpretation. So it's much like... I don't want to say Alfred Hitchcock specifically, but one of his favorite things to do was to actually not show you the gore, but to give you, let your imagination run and mm-hmm. see where it go from there. So the open interpretations that I provide to our audience is basically that there's this story, they get to figure out what it is. We have a very strong storyline and you can tell what it is, but as far as like, where it's going to go and how they feel it ended or what happened to what, like, that's on them, which is awesome because at one point we had one puppet who was the queen puppet. She'd fallen to the ground and all of her little puppets had come around her to make sure that she was okay, and she died there on stage. And then I took another puppet from the audience and drug her off, and the interpretation that one of the audience members gave me and him and his friends had taken from that was I was taking her to hell. And in that place, I was going to make her into a new puppet. And there was this whole elaborate like scheme that he concocted for this whole scenario that took place, which was just me taking the puppet to the back room. But that's how him and a group of like 20 other people felt about the situation, which gave me even more inspiration to try and do like varied acts and concepts and stuff like that. So this year we're moving forward with a much more elaborate show, and then we're gonna go and start performing at other places as well. Also, we do perform with
Blakenstein,
yes.
Okay.
We have some character concepts that we're creating with that as well. Jasmine's first time with us was on a Blakenstein show. We performed at Loaded in Hollywood.
I remember that because it was a 21 and up bar, and I was like, still underage.
Go ahead.
Oh, you can. I have a question for Kitty after, but
sure.
By all means.
All I was going to say is the show went off okay. Not our best work, but I mean, we still managed to pull through, and improv is an amazing thing.
I hear you. So, Kitty, if you wanted to tell me more about your character or your role in it and how it sort of develops and what you like to do.
So, the concept we came out with was she's more of the older, polished puppets. She has a really love-hate relationship with everything around her. She's very angry, very like, oh, I'll love you, but I'll backstab you. So she's not nice in any aspect. Like, you can... My favorite thing when I was working Not Scary Farm, being a vampire, is you could be like the Venus flytrap. You're pretty to look at, but you don't want to know what goes on behind the scenes, so...
Right on. Okay, so how do you... And also, I guess, where Jasmine comes in a little bit, you're saying that things have sort of taken a new direction and things are becoming more elaborate. How does practice look like? How does coming up with ideas, what does that look like?
Well, the great thing is I've been crowdsourcing here with my fellow performers, and they've actually helped me to inspire new shows and stuff like that. And at this point, it's no longer me. The show is not about me. It's actually about all of us. We are the Grace of Bondage now. It's not about just me, which is awesome, too. Jasmine over here helped me come up with some really amazing, like, psychological concepts for the new show. And I don't want to give away too many spoilers.
Okay.
Kitten over here has also been helping me with some outlining and concepts as well for the show. And then, of course, we also have Lady Jules. These are our core members. We have other people that we're randomly going to be bringing in from time to time to help out. If I remember correctly, we might be bringing you in.
Oh, yeah. I happen to be one of those people.
Yeah. But that being said, I think that maybe... that question would be better answered by these two because, I mean, they're helping me to create this, so...
I actually was going to ask, David's mentioning the psychological aspect, and mm-hmm. I kind of have a brief sort of cursory grasp of your sense of humor, so I'm curious, like, when you say psychological, so what's your sort of take when you got first introduced to The Grace of Bondage, and what ideas did that strike with you on the psychological twisted level?
I thought it would be fun it's a very unique show, that's for sure. I knew it would mess with the audience in one way or another. Like David said, it inspires a variety of emotions that they don't understand, which always excites me. I don't know. What do you mean?
I guess when you see sort of what the Grace of Bondage was doing, and like with your part in it, what would you like to represent? Because Kitty's sort of talking about what her character represents in terms of like love and hate and passion on all spectrums, I guess.
We're still kind of in the beginnings of figuring out what kind of character I'd be, but so far it seems to be a very mischievous puppet that likes to fuck with the others and then gets her just desserts.
Yes. Also, I apologize for not saying this beforehand, but we're not allowed to use swears on the radio.
Oh.
It's all okay, but in any case, just so we know. No, it's my bad. But continue.
Oh, that's pretty much it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. So, and as you guys mentioned, you've performed at the LA Fetish Film Festival in the past, and you will be this coming festival?
Correct. The LA Fetish Film Festival on
November 13th.
November 13th. Okay. So, can one of you guys tell me a little bit about more of the audience about the upcoming show?
I guess this is going to be directed at me. So, let me first tell you a little bit about the LA Fetish Film Festival so that you better understand where we're coming from as far as our performance is concerned. The LA Fetish Film Festival has been put together by a gentleman by the name of Michael Simmons, and he's gone out of his way to try and give people an outlet or like a way to see or participate or express their personal fetishes in a very creative, artistic manner. And he's created this whole concept for people who would like to be upcoming directors and stuff like that, where he has you submit film to him, and those films are run during that time based on how well they came out and what the concept behind it is. But that being said, the show is like corely around like expressing that fetish in yourself and feeling comfortable in yourself to do it, and allowing that fetish to elaborate into an artistic like basis. So that being said, a lot of times whenever we do shows with that particular venue, individual, and or his people, we are the Grace of Bondage. We are also the Grace of Bondage in other shows too, but we make sure that every core concept in those shows is based around some fundamental amount of bondage, whether it be psychological, physical, sexual, orientational, whatever it is. We're looking for a way to elaborate on that particular bondage, and sometimes people get over it in the show and sometimes they don't.
I see.
So indeed. I don't know if that answered your question or not.
More or less. I mean, I was thinking a bit about how you guys had mentioned an Alice in Wonderland theme for the upcoming thing. But you don't have to give away too many specific stuff.
I will give away a little bit, but not too much. So our lovely Jasmine over here came up with a core concept for the... Each character plays a psychosis. They have... I won't go into the specific characters or their psychoses. But each character plays a psychosis, and in doing so, it helps us to show you that Alice is going to be trying to adapt to said psychosis or get over them. And based on that situation is the outcome of Alice, and that's going to be the big to-do with that show. And you get to see Alice's very unusual transformation. And as far as other concepts are concerned, Kitten over here has helped me with a number of different concepts as well, as far as putting that show together, which has been really nice because between the two of them, I haven't had to like
take
my brains. Yes. And then Lady Jules, who is our very, very mad, passionate, aggressive puppet, because she normally plays a very intense character. Either she's the puppet queen, or in this case, she'll be another type of queen. I'm sure you guys can figure out which that one is. And in doing so, she is going to be a direct representation of pure, unbridled passion and insanity.
Okay.
That's just to give you a hint of what's going on. Obviously, I'm sure you can figure out which one's going to be the mischievous one and then which one's going to be the other type.
I see. Also, I appreciate the fact that you bring up the word insanity, because that sort of ties into something else I wanted to ask you guys. Because I'm not going to lay down specifically anything but a platform for you guys to elaborate on here, but when we were sort of talking about the podcast a while back, I remember you had mentioned sort of wanting to talk about, I guess, certain aspects of BDSM exercised in a responsible manner.
Oh.
More or less.
Okay, so from show to real life. Sounds great.
Yeah, and so however you want to segue into that, if you wanted to, maybe you can either start with just that itself or sort of how you guys individually, like, I don't know if coming out of the closet is the same thing with BDSM, like,
well, there's
in
no,
a similar way.
There's no coming out of the closet with this, at least for any of us.
Or rather coming into oneself, if that makes any sense.
Well, to be honest with you, I've been doing the BDSM thing for a very long time. I've been introducing Kitten into the BDSM world, and I've been helping to elaborate on Jasmine's BDSM situation. And we, now that we are all, like, in a relationship, we try to move forward and play in the BDSM world and community together.
Okay.
And we're looking to elaborate on our own kinks and fetishes and concepts. Not entirely sure how deeply you want me to go with that.
Wherever you want. It's sort of the irony of being at a school radio station is that you can basically talk about whatever you want as long as you don't use profanity. Yeah.
I would then shift my attention over to Kitten and then Jasmine, so maybe they can elaborate on that more.
Absolutely.
What was your question?
So basically, if you wanted to talk a little bit about how you came into where you are now with kink.
I've always been really curious about it. It's just something that I haven't been able to actually delve into until I met David. Like, I heard a whole bunch of stories about David, and that's it.
Here we go.
Yeah. So, in fact, even, like, this was before we were dating. I had no idea he was into this stuff. So, like, actually talking to him and getting to know about things, getting to know what his, like, what he's actually into, what he's all about, it was a lot easier for me to accept who I am. I'm not a sub, but I do enjoy some subby stuff, and I definitely enjoy a lot of the domination stuff. Like, we get to perform more dommy stuff with Jasmine, and it's been really, really interesting. It's been a really interesting journey, and, like, it's definitely helped me grow as a person. So,
okay. And that's sort of, it's funny because literally today, as I was finishing writing up some of these questions, I sort of made a new friend recently that I mentioned with the tattoos, and we sort of met up and had a conversation for the first time today, and as it always does, somehow BDSM came up, and she was like, well, what do you think, do you think that people who are masochistic or who are into BDSM have been abused? And I'm like, how do I put this? I mean, there's always overlap because a lot of people have experienced sexual assault. Regardless of that, is there a stronger pull for those kind of people? I really kind of don't like that question. I mean, I appreciate where it comes from, and I understand why people might make that conclusion, but frankly, I knew it was kinky before, like...
It's not always the case.
Yeah.
It can be the case. There are times where people use BDSM as a means to deal with childhood traumas, family issues. Sometimes they have to deal with rape issues. Sometimes it's a situation where they just don't understand it. Sometimes it can be very therapeutical, which is the other thing that most people don't understand, is if you are dealing with these situations and you go into a BDSM situation, you have to be responsible about the people you play with. But in doing so, I'm not encouraging that people go out and cut themselves or anything like that, but there are sometimes people just cannot relate to the pain that's going on inside of their heads. And so they want you to either inflict it on themselves so they can feel it, so they can try and alleviate themselves from that burden, or they will go out and try and have other people help them with that.
Right.
Which is another one of those play responsible situations. And in this case, I would actually, I would like to digress to Jasmine, because she could probably better give you an idea on how that works in those kind of situations.
Indeed. I mean, and I was going to ask you also the same question, sorry, as the other two, in terms of how you came into where you are now, but also from a psychological perspective, I'm also curious at what David posed. So whichever order you want to go in.
As far as the desire for BDSM coming from trauma, I cannot have much of an opinion because I don't come from that place. Although, same as Kitty, I've always experienced some level of interest in that kind of thing. As far as responsibility, I actually have a very firm grasp on now because of these two, because I have kind of a semi-dangerous fascination, which is cutting. We are very safe about it. We use medical gloves and clean scalpels, and we make sure the skin is clean and all that good stuff.
And then aftercare.
Yeah, aftercare. They're very good. They cover all the bases. But that kind of thing can go very wrong if you're with the wrong people or just not considering consequences, things like that. So that's very important.
Indeed. So how did that originally come up with you guys?
The cutting? I think they just asked me what I was into.
Okay. And I did have a thing actually written out for how I was going to introduce that, so I appreciate you bringing it up by yourself. Where was I? I love it when my mind blanks on air. It's so much fun. Oh, yeah, I think so. I was mostly going to focus on, what sort of was brought up at the time in terms of cutting and, I guess, other things that people consider extreme about BDSM, about exercising responsibility with that, and what that would look like for perhaps those people who are thinking about it or think it's the weirdest thing on the planet and don't understand how it could be carried out. Yeah.
Well, for me, as far as responsibility is concerned, you want to go out and learn as much as you can about everything before you even play in this world. I've been in the world for a while. I've seen some stuff go really bad. The best thing I could recommend is if you're going to play with stuff like the cutting and stuff like that, I actually was a professional tattoo artist and I did piercings for a while. Had a huge fascination for biology, so I went out of my way to study up on as many like bloodborne illnesses, sexually transmitted diseases, and or like things that can go wrong in any of those situations. Also, there's a degree of restraint and respect that you have to have. You have to make sure that you sit down with the individuals involved, make sure that they have a good psychological standing, that you're not going to put them in a dangerous place, and you want to start very, very slow and build up to a point where you can pay attention to. Now, the other thing I would mention in this is everybody is affected with an insanity, which can be drawn out in what are called, well, I'm sure everybody knows what a pheromone is, but to be 100% honest with you, when you're playing with blood or anything like that, there's the potential for things to go wrong, not just in the sense that you can catch diseases from cutting or stuff like that. So make sure that if you are ever going to do this, that you do it responsibly and you do it with people who are tested and that you get some knowledge on that. But there's also the psychological aspect of that, because you might be hurting the person psychologically that you're doing it with, and you yourself might not be able to control yourself completely when doing it as well. So those are some safety factors that I would also take into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's that, and also something I remember you saying at the time was that in the situation, both the person doing the cutting and the person on the receiving end of it are insane.
Yes.
Because, you know, there's no sane way to do that. And I was curious, how do you actually think that? And
why do I think that? Because if you were to look at the, like, textbook definition of sanity, you do not find underneath there that people go out of their way to cut each other in order to, like, show affection or anything like that. It's quite the opposite. More often than not, people view affection through kissing and hugging and loving and being attentive to one's needs, but it's the other side of that attentiveness. It's like when you decide to delve deeper, in a sense, when I'm cutting Jasmine or Kat's cutting Jasmine, we're attending to a need that she has, and we're doing it very carefully, and we're, you know, elaborating on something that she enjoys very much so, and we also express how much we enjoy. But we also have a spotter anytime we do it. The great thing about our three-way relationship, too, is at any point in time we decide to delve into these more
interesting
situations, we also have somebody who's on the outside watching both people to make sure that, obviously, they're not cutting too deep, because you don't want infections, and obviously you don't want a trip to the hospital or stitches.
Yeah.
And you also have to make sure the person cutting isn't getting too excited by the amount of cutting.
Which is sort of where I want to ask Kitty a little bit about, for one, sort of your role with that, and also if you believe that people who engage in stuff, if that either makes you insane or if you are insane to do so.
So, as a spotter, when I am watching David or whatever. You always want to, I'm very sensitive to like the energies in the room to, I know David really well. It's always good to do these things with people you know very well. You can pick up like the switch in emotions, the switch in like the brain mindset. You want to make sure you're doing this with people you trust. You want to make sure that you're able to pick up anything on a split ends notice. There have been a few times where I've had to take the scalpel away because I've picked up on that. And sometimes I'll let it go just a little bit just to see where it goes. But you always have to be very cautious, very mindful of what's going on. And as for the insanity thing, yeah, probably.
Okay.
Like you said, you don't do these by definition in societal whatever. You don't do these things to the people you love. So.
Okay.
But you can.
But you can.
You can.
Definitely. You want to be able to trust the people that you're with. So.
Okay. So what are your feelings on that?
On the insanity thing?
Yes.
I don't know if I'd jump straight to insanity. You could say that, like, eating a lot of food is insane because it feels good, or, like, masturbating a lot is insane because it feels good. doing this kind of thing for the people that do it, it's satisfying on that base level.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. And
I'm
this
sorry,
is.
I can't elaborate too much.
That's okay.
And I'm not saying, sorry, one last thing. I'm not saying anybody who does it is insane.
Yeah.
In fact, I think sanity is a relative term. I'm basing these concepts loosely, very loosely, on a societal like basis. We're not saying that we're insane or that Jasmine's insane or anybody else is insane. I'm saying by stereotypical, generic, like standards, it's considered insanity.
Right.
But I'm playing devil's advocate in that sense because I personally don't see it as an insane thing either.
Okay.
So I'm not trying to say that she's insane. Or
I know. That's why I was curious. I was like, so is it like a... Again, like a devil's advocate thing, or if, okay, just checking. And also something that you guys have probably run into a lot and that I know I've run into a lot is whenever people are exposed to what they consider an alternative lifestyle or choice, whether that's polyamory or BDSM or even being vegan or something, they think that they're being attacked and that their lifestyle is being insulted by the simple fact that you don't live that way.
Mm-hmm.
So how... Or that basically by being that way that you're trying to exert some sort of superiority over them. So I was curious how you guys registered that.
Actually, I think Jasmine put it perfectly in the car earlier as we were walking up here. Would you like to elaborate on that statement, Jasmine?
What was the statement?
The selfish one.
there's a common assumption that bisexual people are selfish or greedy or what have you. Simply by the fact that they can enjoy both of the genders and then the person that is assuming can't. What path were you thinking I was going to take exactly?
I was just hoping that you would say that lovely catchphrase.
Oh. on the flip side, when I'm in the middle of these two, I think damn straight I'm greedy.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's funny how even people who are, I don't know if people have a problem with this race, I don't really care, who are monosexual on either side of the spectrum, whether they're lesbian or gay or straight, you see some people get so very attached to like what that means and how that symbolizes their integrity, quote marks, or something. And it's like, okay, I don't know like when it is that you bought into the thing, but even though I could get into so much more about how people have problems with like what they consider selfish, which is really just somebody being who they are, but they sort of have poor concepts of like their responsibility of how they affect the other people in their life and even how they act even if like they're straight and they have a white picket fence and like they have this whole, you know, thing that's considered normal, but they could be a very careless person. Whereas on the other side, things that they consider alternative or weird or freaky, people might actually be considering very much how they're affecting the other people in their life, hopefully. But
I can actually elaborate on that a little bit.
Sure.
So what happens most of the time is due to a societal situation yet again, based on a lot of dogma that has come into play since whenever. It's actually human nature to indulge in and or be sexual. I mean, we are designed to procreate, and that drive is in everybody. You ask any single individual out there if they are not thinking about sex at any given time, and if they say they're not, I'm going to call them a liar. That being said, on top of that, you have the ability to tune into yourself and be who you want to be and who you are. And in doing so, a lot of times the first place most people need to explore is their sexuality. And I know a lot of people don't like to go, oh, well, sexuality shouldn't rule your life, but it's our base urge. It's the urge that we have besides eating, sleeping, and using the restroom. Our goal every day is to dress up. The whole reason anybody wears makeup, anybody like goes to a club or a function, if you're trying to become a powerful person like in society as far as making money or anything that's concerned, a lot of it is to just be that alpha sexual being so that everything wants you.
Right.
That being said, as far as like sexuality is concerned, bisexuality, straight, gay, or whatever, I think that a lot of people get caught up in the concept and don't realize that they need to stray away from the concept itself and just realize it's human nature. Human nature in and of itself is to enjoy these things. And life is much more enjoyable when you do it. I've done the turbo monogamy relationship situation, and I'm doing what we're doing now, and I've done it before too. And you have to do it with responsible, intelligent, and adult individuals. So in doing so, you can find that the world can be a pretty amazing place as long as you accept who you are and you find people who accept who they are, and then you all indulge in the things that you can do safely and intelligently.
Okay. So also, I just got the cue that we have a few minutes left, unfortunately.
Okay.
But in any case, Kitty, was there anything that you wanted to mention or say?
Personally, like, I get the both of best worlds. Like, if he's off playing video games, I get cuddles with her. So, if it's greedy, cool. But, like, I don't understand why polyamory is looked at so wrongly. Because, like, wouldn't you want to be in a relationship where you're getting all of your needs met? So,
indeed. Yeah. And if I had more time, I would sort of tie into, like, how people have these weird standards of, like, what it's okay to want or what it's okay, like, what needs it's okay to have met. It's like, why do you want to punish yourself so? But anyway, Jasmine, did you have anything on your mind?
Nope.
Okay, fair enough. Let me see. Usually at the end of my podcast, I'll play Horror by In This Moment, but given that it's a Halloween-y kind of season, I'll probably be leading into, what is it, The World's a Very Scary Place by the Gothic Archies. And I meant to mention this at the beginning of the show, but I was told today that it is National Cat Day.
And I'm a kitty cat.
Yes.
So appreciate me.
Yes.
I was hoping you'd say that because that is a clear instruction to anyone listening to this podcast that you must have appreciation. Yes. But anyway, I always lead up at the ending with how many months and days until Halloween. And now there are only 2 days until Halloween. I've been waiting so long to say that. But in that case, I've been joined by Jasmine Nino, David Hutchinson, and Kitty. Mm-hmm. So thank you guys so much for being part of my show.
Thanks for having us.
You're very welcome.
It's been a pleasure.
Indeed.
About the one thing you can live without. Yeah, I'm the girl you've been waiting for. I have you down on your knees, I'll love you begging for more. You probably thought I wouldn't get this far. You thought I'd end up in the back of a car. You probably thought that I'd never escape. I'd be a rider to cage, I'd be a slave to this place. You don't know how hard I fought to survive. Waking up alone when I was left to die. And you don't know about this life I've led. All these roads I walk, all these stairs I. Let me tell you something.